The House will come to order. Please stand. The flag salute will be led by Representative Cameron.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our opening ceremony this morning will be presented by Pastor Tom Hurt, who is the senior pastor of Oregon City Evangelical Church. Tom's been a real community leader. In fact, he just finished one of many terms on the Oregon City Chamber of Commerce Board. He also served several terms, including one with me on the Oregon City School Board. Welcome, Pastor Hurt.
Please bow for prayer. Our Heavenly Father, I thank you. We can come to you today and ask for your help, your mercy, and your wisdom. I thank you that you love us and that we as people make a difference to you. Father, I ask your help for each of the 60 men and women of our House of Representatives. These are difficult days in our state and nation, and these men and women are seeking to provide leadership. Each one carries personal and professional burdens, and I pray they find help from you and their burdens be lifted. I call out to you, God of all, and ask that you grant wisdom as they act. I pray that each one would humbly seek your mind and your understanding in order to lead our state in the way we should go. I pray that this day will be looked upon as a day in which they sense the hand of God helping them and leading them. Father, this Saturday we celebrate the 150th anniversary of our state. I pray that in this anniversary year, the hearts of Oregonians will turn to you. Where we have wandered from your truth, forgive us, and may your blessings fall on Oregon, on its people, its businesses, its schools, its churches, its families, and its marriages. Lord, guide today the Speaker of the House, Dave Hunt, the House Majority Leader, Mary Nolan, House Republican Leader, Bruce Hanna, and Governor Kulongoski. May they sense your help today. Father, I thank you that you have heard these requests. I ask you grant them, not because we deserve your favor, but because of your mercy and gracious love demonstrated through your Son, Jesus Christ, in whose name and honor I pray. Amen. Thank you.
Courtesies. We'll begin with our moment in Oregon history. Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, colleagues. This sesquicentennial history minute is from the Oregon Encyclopedia, a statewide project supported by Portland State University, the Oregon Historical Society, and the Oregon Council of Teachers of English, with generous support from the Oregon Cultural Trust. This history minute is from an entry written by David Peterson Del Mar and regards statehood and George Abernathy, the one and only provisional governor of Oregon. Born in New York City in 1807, George Abernathy came to Oregon in 1840 as part of the Great Reinforcement, one of a group of men and women sent to support the Methodists' endeavors in the Willamette Valley. An astute politician, Abernathy became Oregon's first and only provisional governor in 1845. His power extended to the press, and he controlled Oregon's first newspaper, the Oregon Spectator, from 1846 to 1855. As governor, Abernathy proposed a moderate course during the tumultuous years between Oregon's organization and its admission to the Union. His first message to the legislature in late 1845 requested that it institute a militia, adopt a standard of weights and measures, and survey a new road into the Willamette Valley. The governor wanted a pilot service to help ships cross the Columbia River Bar, strong schools, and a system of land claims that did not require settlers to travel long distances. In 1847, Abernathy guided Oregon's response to the killings at Whitman Mission and contributed funds to finance the militia that fought in the ensuing war. Abernathy was a significant philanthropist and in 1849 was among the major contributors to the Clackamas County Female Seminary and purchased Portland's first fire engine in 1856. Throughout his life, he worked on behalf of the Methodist Church and its causes. George Abernethy cut a wide swath through Oregon's religious, economic, and political life, and his legacy was felt for decades after his death in 1877. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further courtesies, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, colleagues. It is my pleasure to ask that the entire chamber extend courtesies to firefighters and fire chiefs from around the state who are here visiting the Capitol today and observing our floor session. Welcome, gentlemen and ladies. I saw at least a few ladies up there. And welcome to your House of Representatives.
Welcome. Good to have you here. Further courtesies, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I would like to, the entire chamber also, to extend courtesies to a wonderful lady who is going to be here every month helping out various members. Her name is Aramis Murray. She's 13. She's a homeschooler. She wants to be a state rep when she grows up. So give her a welcome.
Welcome. Further courtesies, Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I would like to acknowledge five members of the Bend Fire Department who made their way across the snowy mountains this morning to come here in support of some legislation that's going to be before the House floor today. They are Jeff Jensen, Peter Hossick, Robert Cravens, Patricia Conley, and Jeremy South, and they're up in the back gallery.
Welcome. Further courtesies. Colleagues, I did just receive a text message from Representative Chris Edwards that this morning at 9:15 a.m., so just over an hour ago, Anna Caroline Edwards was welcomed into the world. Chris's text message says, Mom and baby are doing fine. Dad is really happy and taking lots of pictures. So we'll have those to see next week. Once again, the productivity of the 2009 legislative session continues. Further courtesies. The clerk will now open the voting system for the purposes of verifying a quorum. Excused today are Representative Chris Edwards, Representative Garrett, Representative Olson, Representative Van Orman. All other members are present. Messages from the Governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed Senate Bills 5543, 5562, and Senate Bill 338. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate has passed Senate Bills 5660, 164, 173, 174, 234, 240, 86, 183, 197, and 323.
First reading, Memorials and Resolutions.
H.R. 2, commemorating Rotary International on occasion of 104th anniversary of organization's founding.
Measure read for the first time is passed to the speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 2595 relating to persons employed to provide certain health care services. House Bill 2596 relating to land use planning for large urban parks. House Bill 2597 relating to medical assistance for pregnant women. House Bill 2598 relating to stem cell research appropriate amending declaring an emergency. House Bill 2599 relating to hostile educational environments and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2601 relating to agricultural fuel cooperatives. House Bill 2602 relating to hospital credentialing. House Bill 2603 relating to relating to metal detectors in state parks. House Bill 2604 relating to individual identifiable health information. House Bill 2605 relating to scholarships to study critical needed foreign languages, appropriate money, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2606 relating to graduation requirements for students who study abroad. House Bill 2607 relating to Mandarin immersions programs, appropriate money, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2608 relating to health insurance coverage. House Bill 2609 relating to property tax deferral and appropriate money. House Bill 2610 relating to health care professionals. House Bill 2611 relating to prescribing preceding year production limits for brewery public house licensees selling at wholesale and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2612 relating to statute of limitations for product liability civil actions. House Bill 2613 relating to provision of utility services to tenants and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2614 related to rented dwelling units and floodplains. House Bill 2615 related to urban renewal. House Bill 2616 related to local government tobacco taxes and prescribing effective date. House Bill 2617 related to school guidance counselors. House Bill 2618 related to designated highway speeds. House Bill 2619 related to the printing of the Oregon revised statutes and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2620 relating to constitutional convention and providing that this act shall be referred to the people for their approval or rejection. House Bill 2621 relating to ballots and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2622 relating to tobacco products. House Bill 2623 relating to prison education programs. House Bill 2624 relating to training for unemployment insurance claimants. House Bill 2625 relating to ballot water. House Bill 2627 related to crimes involving animals. House Bill 2628 relating to the Access and Habitat Board. House Bill 2629 relating to crimes involving animals. House Bill 2630 relating to Oregon Fire Commission and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2631 related to renewals of consumer contracts. House Bill 2632 relating to State Financial Administration appropriate money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2633 relating to supervisory employees under public collective bargaining law. House Bill 2634 relating to security for payment of workers' compensation insurance premiums. House Bill 2635 relating to drug tests for public officials. House Bill 2636 relating to taking wildlife. House Bill 2637 relates to state prohibition of smoking.
Bills read for the first time or passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2172 relating to relief from sex offender reporting. House Bill 2174 relating to relief from sex offender reporting. House Bill 2247 related to liquor licenses. House Bill 2249 related to alcoholic beverage service permits. House Bill 2251 relating to service permit application and endorsements. House Bill 2523 relating to special meetings of shareholders.
Bills read for the second time were passed to third reading. Colleagues, the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 5015 be read for the second time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 5015, relating to State Financial Administration appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
Bill read for the second time is passed to third reading. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in a short summary.
House Bill 2305, relating to shareholder voting, requires two or more classes of stock otherwise entitled to vote on separate groups on amendment to articles of incorporation to vote as single group if amendment affects classes in same or substantial similar way, unless articles provide or board of directors requires otherwise.
The question now rises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2305. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2305, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2420, related to workers' compensation claims for cancer by firefighters.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2420. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended at this time and I be allowed to use a visual aid during my presentation on House Bill 2420.
Representative Matthews requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended for purposes of a visual aid. Is there objection? So ordered. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2420 comes to you from the House Committee on Business and Labor, where it passed with a unanimous 9-1 or near unanimous 9-1 from that committee, with the fine leadership of our chair, our great representative from Happy Valley. As a career firefighter with the City of Gresham, it's my honor to present this bill in the presence and on behalf of a lot of the men and women that are sitting here tonight and a lot of those folks that are protecting our communities right now. And so I'm here before you and humbled by this opportunity as I present Bill 2420. Simply put, it presumes for the purpose of workers' compensation that a firefighter's cancer is the direct result of their employment as a career firefighter. Currently, the burden of proof rests on firefighters to prove their illness as being a result of occupation. Presumptive cancer changes that onus. The claim is approved if the appropriate criteria are met. Unless the employer, this is rebuttable, unless the employer can demonstrate that the illness is not a result of the firefighter occupation. Without presumptive legislation, a worker who contracts an illness as a result of their job must file a workers' compensation claim and endure the uncertainties of the claim process. The system of claim and appeals can take years to produce final decisions. In fact, sometimes it can take a lifetime. Even so, there is still no guarantee the workers' compensation claim system will recognize occupational disease and award appropriate compensation. There are cases where firefighters who have contracted cancer as a result of years of toxic exposures and filed claims were asked, at which fire specifically did this event occur? It's merely impossible standard that has caused Oregon's firefighters to become frustrated and not even attempt to regain compensation. I, for one, cannot imagine anybody possibly having any success reflecting on their long and prosperous career as being able to recall a specific event in which they attracted cancer, in which on which particular day the toxins were more severe than any other, that would be the event where they got cancer. It's unconscionable. It's been suggested firefighters are equipped with protective equipment to shield them from dangers that they face at the scene of emergencies. But I'm here to tell you that this helmet alone, with our protective turnouts, our self-contained breathing apparatus, our large heavy gloves, is not enough to protect us from the dangerous toxins on the scene of the emergencies we respond. Asbestos, benzene, carbon monoxide, formaldehyde, vinyl chloride, and 70,000 other toxic chemicals on file at the EPA become over 70 million when they begin products of combustion. They simply permeate our fabric, they permeate our suits, our turnout equipment, they're into our skin through our gloves, they're down our necks. You cannot be 100% protected, and there are times when you're doing work without your self-contained breathing apparatus. Even though in today's world of fire service we're constantly striving for safety, there are times that we are exposed. This isn't a suit that you drop off of your dry cleaners. This isn't a helmet you simply brush off and put back to work. This is something that lives with you. You're breathing it 24 hours, a third of your life. It's not fair. And cancer presumption is an act of fairness. Scientific research is unequivocal. Firefighters have an increased incidence of leukemia, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and brain cancer, just to name a few, as compared to many other occupations. While recruitment efforts continue to focus on career outreach at the high schools, the community fair, community colleges, our youth explorer programs, it seems unconscionable to me to attract men and women to a job that has such an increased risk of cancer and yet not provide them presumption coverage in the event that they should ever need it and be diagnosed with the disease. While it's important that we all understand the need to protect those who dedicate their lives to protecting us, I think it's equally important to talk about the collaborative effort behind this piece of legislation. Many of you were here last session. You've been here many, many years. Cancer presumption is nothing new to you. But let's not be so quick to jump to the conclusion that this bill is the same old bill. It's not. Several changes. In fact, last session it became quite apparent that there was no way that without concessions from stakeholders and making a combined effort of changes, that if those weren't crafted, this much-needed bill was going to go away and die in committee. Fortunately, commitments to the cause prevailed, and what once seemed impossible became highly probable due to the dedication of the Oregon State Firefighter Council, the Special Districts Association of Oregon, the Volunteer Firefighter Association, the Oregon Chief Fire Chief Association, the Oregon Fire District Directors Association, and the City of Portland. Now I ask you folks, when was the last time that we ever saw a bill that was drafted with labor and management, that went through special districts and city, that was supported by Republicans and Democrats, and actually came to this floor with unanimous consent from the Management Labor Advisory Committee? This is this bill, House Bill 2420. Not only do we have a responsible bill that serves the needs of these firefighters, but it also meets the needs of the administrators, and that is that it has a definite start date of July 1 of 2009. It is not retroactive. That was one of the problems in the past. Also, it applies to non-volunteer firefighters. It's career firefighters with 5 years experience or greater. It also has a tail, which states it's an ending date. The question was posed, would we like to have it, have no tail on it? Well, obviously, as I said, concessions were made in favor of this bill to get this bill to where it is now. And I appreciate all the work everybody's done. The tail on the bill is now 84 months beyond your retirement date. 84 months, 7 years. These specific clauses allowed for predictability and cost containment that many of the entities were seeking. I feel compelled that I need to address before this body the exaggeration of the cost associated with this particular piece of legislation. Hasina Squires, representing Special District Association of Oregon, offered during her testimony that the Special District Association of Oregon writes workers' compensation coverage for nearly 50% of Oregon's firefighters, and they do not plan to raise rates at all during the upcoming premium year. The National Council on Compensation Insurance indicated that with the passage of this measure, rates for firefighters may increase slightly. Additionally, the Department of Consumer and Business Services notes that the estimated number of compensable claims under this bill will have a negligible impact on workers' comp assessment rates, since firefighters represent a very small portion of covered Oregon workers under the system, and I believe it's less than 1%. I'd also be remiss if I stood here and failed to mention that during the hearing on January 30th, 2009, on House Bill 2420, John Schiltz, who I appreciate his work and the fine work he's done for our committee and for this building and the process, the administrator for the DCBS Worker Compensation Division, was asked specifically, what has been the total dollar amount of employer savings from reduced or unchanged compensation employer rates over the past 19 years? His response is stated in a memorandum dated February 2nd, since 1991, employers have saved approximately $16.4 billion. And yet some are saying they can't afford a slight to negligible increase. Perhaps the thing I like to stress the most about this is that it represents all that's good about this particular process. Instead of finding ways to shut each other down, several different entities gathered to work together and made concessions along the way to create legislation that serves the various groups that they represent well. It has gone through the rigors of Management Labor Advisory Committee, where it passed with unanimous consent, and it came out of the House Committee of Business and Labor, where it was sent to this floor with a near unanimous 9-1 vote. In closing, while inherent dangers and risks may be part of the firefighting profession, firefighter cancer should not be accepted or dismissed as being part of our job. These men and women have dedicated their lives to responding to the needs of our constituents with care, compassion, and consistency, regardless of the task. We have before us the ability to reverse the role, if only for a moment, and respond to the needs of our firefighters. Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I stand before you humbled by the opportunity, and I urge an aye vote on House Bill 2420.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
You know, our job here is to wade through the details, and it's a real fun job, and I love doing it, and that's why I signed the bill by Representative Matthews. I support this bill easily. I urge you all to as well, mostly out of selfish reasons. I'll be quite frank with you. My firehouse is right around the corner from my house. Mr. Koenig up here has staffed it in the past. I know several firefighters. I've got to know them over the years. 1159 rolled out one time to our house when I just let a backdraft in my wood burner get away from me, and I didn't get to the alarm company fast enough, and there was an inch of ice on the snow, and here they are. They showed up. And then the firefighter insisted coming in and checking it out. I think he was just checking to see I wasn't stealing up moonshine or something, but he was really nice, and I talked to our daughter a little bit about firefighting and was nothing but a gentleman, and I was eternally begging his forgiveness for dragging those guys out that day. But you know what? These guys and gals are there for us and our families, and even if this were some topsy-turvy world, and I've were so inclined to vote no on this bill, I know exactly who I'm going to call when I need them. And they're sitting right there and right up there, and they're going to roll out for me. And in my humble opinion, and there are negligible increases on this. We saw some wild, exaggerated increased rates that just simply have no foundation in fact. But if there are any increases as a result of this, I just think they're worth it, and I strongly urge your vote.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Yes. Representative, on the bill, there's a seven-year period that this applies. After that time, one of my troubles is, and by the way, I was the only no vote in the committee, and I'll tell you why here shortly. But after this seven-year period, what happens then? The firefighters themselves do not lose out on this situation with the cancer, do they?
Mr. Speaker, and to our good representative, they actually will default into the system that's currently there now, which means, of course, they'd have a, I would say, insurmountable set of odds to overcome. Because as you, I guess, as retirees beyond 7 years, and I understand and I appreciate your question and the problem you had with the bill, I want to be clear that this was crafted again as a, one of the concessions that was made was to put this tail on it. And I appreciate where you want to be on this and where I think firefighters would like to have this open-ended tail go forever. But because of predictability, cost containment, they had to put they agreed to 7 years. Those firefighters, as retirees, would still have an opportunity to file a claim. It will just be a difficult task and an uphill battle.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, like I explained, I was the only no vote in committee. One was the reason that was just explained here by my fellow representative. The other one was there will be a cost to our cities. But having researched this cost out, looking at it, but more importantly, sitting down and thinking about this, when you have a problem, you have either a police officer or a fireman there to help you. And I will change my vote. I will support this bill. And I'll tell you why. Because it's the right thing to do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, House Bill 2420 presumes what every firefighter already knows and in fact has known for many decades, that work in smoke-filled environments where the smoke itself, as well as the chemicals that are released from combusted and or smoldering materials create a toxic brew that permeates their clothing, their gear, and their bodies, both externally as well as internally. They also know that over the years, these kinds and these levels of exposures may lead to cancer. House Bill 2420 makes 12 kinds of firefighter cancers compensable under Oregon's workers' compensation system, a system that is overseen by the Management Labor Advisory Committee, or MLAC, and whose five labor and five management members unanimously recommend passage of this bill. It is worth noting that during MLAC's past 19 years of oversight, our state's workers' compensation system has seen system-wide savings totaling nearly $16.5 billion. And never once in those 19 years of oversight has there been a single increase in pure premium rates for workers' compensation insurance in the state of Oregon. This is a record that is unmatched in any of the other 49 states in the United States. In keeping with that record, our state's Workers' Compensation Division finds that House Bill 2420 will have, quote, a negligible impact on workers' compensation assessments rates. Colleagues, this bill provides workers' compensation coverage for potentially deadly occupational diseases, and it will do so without offsetting any of the $16.5 billion worth of savings to our system. On that basis, I urge your aye vote for House Bill 2420, and I would like to add parenthetically to note that I received an email yesterday from Patrick Martin. Patrick is a firefighter and a well-known citizen of the community of St. Helens. Patrick notes that he comes from a family of 11 siblings, and out of those siblings, he is the only family member who is a firefighter. He also notes, quote, that I am the only sibling to have contracted any form of cancer. I'd like to note that at the age of 55, Patrick has already been diagnosed and treated two separate times, one for prostate cancer and one for throat cancer. Colleagues, I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Could you explain to us what this bill would mean to firefighters and their families?
Mr. Speaker, and my great colleague, who's also retired from public safety, I should mention. What it means to firefighters basically is that now they have the ability to at least stay in good conscience in a profession that they love, serve their community with the utmost professionalism, knowing that there is an increased risk. But if forever that day should come, unfortunately not soon enough for, you know, unfortunately Pat Martin is dealing with a situation outside of the limitations of the bill. What it means to firefighters is the ability that their families themselves will be compensated, whether it be in their loss or during their recovery. There are firefighters now that we all know that unfortunately won't qualify for this bill. They would have to be retroactive to not. But when we hear those stories amongst the group and as they spread those out throughout the state and throughout the nation, it's always a tragedy when you hear about these young firefighters that don't have this bill in their state. Oregon's one of 20 that doesn't. We need to be one of the 30 that does. And so what I'd say to you, good representative, is I don't know of too many professions. In fact, I keep it close to my heart during these difficult times, but this patch represents the International Association of Firefighters Firefighter Cancer Support Life Network. The IFF, it is such a severe problem throughout our ranks. They have their own patch, their own group, and their own circles in which families and firefighters are a part of. Beyond that, too, I'll mention, and then I'll leave it at this, but again, I appreciate the question. Just this morning, at 6:45, as I'm at the firehouse after working last night on Truck 71, getting prepared to come to a day at the Capitol building, as I'm telling you, I love this job, my BlackBerry starts to buzz, and on the BlackBerry was a notification of a line-of-duty death to one of our firefighters in Ontario, Canada. I'm notified weekly. We lose about two or three. It's unfortunate, but to our families in Oregon, the good fortune is they will now know that we are supported by the state, we are supported by the folks that say we appreciate you, and they can focus on responding to the calls and the needs of their community. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as was mentioned, I've been in public safety, and numerous times as a police officer I got the call, cover the fire department on a call, so-and-so. I was sent there to keep people from driving over their hoses to direct traffic. But I would watch the firefighters work, and I knew a lot of firefighters. I've been on the served on the Portland Police and Fire Disability and Pension Board. I know police and firefighters nationally. This cancer problem has been huge with firefighters nationally. This is nothing new. We like to kid the firemen about having the easy job, one day on, 2 days off. But they not only have the day on, they have the night on. They stay 24 hours. They're away from their families. And we say, well, you don't take your fire gear home after the fire. They do take it home. Their firehouse is their home a third of the time. That is their home. That is where they live. That is where they eat. I watch firefighters show up at the fire and they'll stand outside. We kid them about, oh, you just stand around and squirt on the building. But I've been there many times in Portland and watched the Portland firefighters pull up, and somebody will say, there's somebody in the building. Without hesitation, they get together and they form a plan in about 3 seconds flat, and they're in that building rescuing people. I've watched them save lives many times. I've watched them when they haven't been successful, but they brought the people out. We all have seen the movies, and we've watched firefighters in the movies fighting the fire. They're fighting fires that are natural gas fires that don't have the smoke or maybe a little smoke. I was invited to do some training at Portland one day with the Portland firefighters, and we fought fires that were made out of pallets, just clean wood, and that smoke is devastating. That smoke is nothing compared to when your rubber couch is on fire. When all the things in your house are burning and combining in chemicals that who God knows what's in those, nobody knows, but the firefighters that are saving us are subject to that. Cost to the cities? What about cost to these firefighters and their families when dad or mom is diagnosed with cancer and can't work or has died from the cancer? It's time for us to take care of those who take care of us. Let's support our firefighters today and vote yes on House Bill 2420. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do, Mr.
He
Speaker.
Does.
Representative, I make no apology for not giving you this question ahead of time, but from across the aisle here, I noticed your prop that you used, and I can't quite see there. There's some soot on the back. What's the name on the back of that helmet?
That would be my name, Mr. Representative.
Thank you, Representative, and thank you for carrying the bill.
Further discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I rise today in support of this bill. As a volunteer firefighter, I haven't been active more than set a few flares and hold hands the last year since I had my back surgery. But my husband as chief and the fire radio going off night and day reminds me every day of what everybody who is in this service does. I have a niece who's a firefighter in Portland. I know that there are many people up there. I don't know what unit you're from, but I just want to say, for all you do, and we could go on all day talking about calls and terrible situations, et cetera. You all know, you've all been there many, many times. But I want to thank you for what you do. And I feel like, colleagues, this is something that we can do back for them, because they never question. When that bell goes off, their pager goes off, they just go. They don't care whose house it is, what business it is, who's in the car crash. They just go. And I want to be there for you because you're there for me. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Matthews, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2420, as we've been discussing, it's an act of fairness. We understand the scientific studies that produce the results of how dangerous this job is and the risk itself. It's tough to be a firefighter, but I know there's not a man or woman up there or anybody else out there doing the job now that would rather do anything else in their life. But in exchange for their commitment and their dedication to our communities and constituents, I believe it's the right thing to do to offer them the protection for what could take their life, if not just alter it significantly, to them and their families. They've been protecting us for all these years, and they'll continue to do so. It's a very fine tradition of Oregon's fire service. This bill came to you from the special districts, from the firefighters, from the fire chiefs, fire administration, MLAC, volunteer firefighters, bipartisan. This isn't about a D or an R. You know, I'll tell you what, it's my opinion this one's easy. I'd sure like to have your support today, and please join me in an aye vote on 2420. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2420, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the resolution. The memorial.
HJM 2, urging Congress to enact legislation assisting veterans' employment.
The question now arises upon third reading, upon final reading and adoption of HJM 2. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we just passed an important bill for one group of very important people who protect us. This is about another group. Colleagues, as a veteran, I'm honored to bring you the House Joint Memorial 2 to you today. HJM 2 asks the United States Congress to do three things that will help our veterans and make the often difficult transition into life as a civilian. First, we ask Congress to increase funding for the local Veterans Employment Representatives Program and the Disabled Veterans Outreach Program. We know that the best way to help soldiers adjust to life as a civilian is to keep them busy and help them be productive. This requires that both state and federal governments properly allocate funds to programs to help veterans get back to work and to provide for their families. The way the federal government currently allocates funds for veterans employment services in Oregon is by looking at how many Oregon veterans registered for employment services compared to the number of veterans who've registered for employment in other states. Because that ratio has dropped slightly, Oregon has seen a major reduction in federal funds for veterans employment services. This doesn't mean that Oregon has fewer veterans than the previous years. Quite the contrary. What it does mean is that the number of veterans registering nationwide is increasing at a greater rate. Because of the lack of adequate funding, Disabled Veterans Outreach Program has had to cut their staff by 18% and local veterans employment representatives, or LEVER, has had to cut their staff by 45%. The reality of these numbers is staggering. Today in Oregon, the average employment specialist serves 1,400 veterans, 1,400 vets for one employment specialist. With increased funding, veterans can have better access to the services that they need and that they deserve. Second, we ask Congress to establish a nationwide public works program that will provide jobs for veterans. We know that this country is in serious need of infrastructure maintenance. As these brave men and women return home, they can be offered work, building bridges, repairing roads, and many other much-needed projects. Our veterans are able and willing to do the work if given the opportunity. This public works program has the potential to create thousands of family wage jobs across the country, further adding to the economic stimulus that we so desperately need. Lastly, while many employers follow the Uniformed Services Employment and Redeployment Rights Act, House Joint Memorial 2 takes it one step further and urges Congress to provide tax credit for companies, both large and small, as an incentive to employ veterans. Colleagues, we have before us a memorial that allows us to, with united voice, tell Congress that they need to do more for our veterans. They who give so much deserve more than we currently give back. The federal government should be doing more. In Oregon, we have 3,500 National Guard troops who will be deployed in April. When they return, they will need our help. And so I ask you for your aye vote on House Joint Memorial 2. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Riley, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the memorial should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. screen's not working. HJM 2, having received the constitutional majority, is declared adopted. The clerk will read the next memorial. I will pause. Representative Greenlee, for what purpose do you wish to be recognized?
May I ask for a suspension of rules to return to courtesies, please?
Representative Greenlee requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules to return to courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, please proceed.
Colleagues, we have a group of students in the building today from Lincoln High School and St. Mary's Academy here, learning about lobbying their legislators. I'm not sure if they're in the gallery right now or not. Ah, they are up here. Well, please welcome them to the Capitol, to the People's House, and provide any courtesy of the day for them, if you will. Thank you guys for coming.
Are there further courtesies? The clerk will read the memorial.
HJM 4, urging Congress to pass legislation for transition of National Guard and reservists to civilian life following active service.
The question now arises on final reading and adoption of HJM 4. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You all have in front of you House Joint Memorial 4, which I'm sure you've read. I'm going to speak more as a veteran that came out of a combat zone. I remember one day I was in Vietnam with an M16 and a 45. 3 days later, I was on a street corner in San Diego. Not much downtime for me. Not much downtime for me to adjust. There's quite a cultural shock when you come from a violent background for a year and you go home to a peaceful environment in which you live. It's very difficult for veterans to adjust to this in a period of that nature. This memorial urges Congress to pass legislation and to fund some what I call downtime for your veterans. When your veteran gets home from coming from a battlefield, they don't want to make decisions on jobs. They don't want to make decisions on what their life's going to be about. They want to be with their family. But more importantly, in this downtime period, they have a realization that, one, their family has changed since they've been gone because of independence, and two, they have changed because of their environment. We need to have an adjustment period for our veterans when they come home. That's what this is all about, this memorial. I can't say anything more than we need to support these young people as they come home. Not only is jobs, like the good representative stated before, but this downtime. Your rates of suicide, your rates of divorce are extremely high in these veterans. And I think this would be a good step in the right direction for them to acclimate from being very wary of anyone that they see to being home with a family and their loved ones in a society that is at peace. So I strongly urge your support on this.
Further discussion, Representative Stigler.
Thank you. Excuse me, Mr. Speaker, to the memorial.
To the memorial.
Colleagues, this joint memorial establishes a modicum of equity with our National Guard's people and our reservists. National Guard's men and women have been asked to sacrifice in ways that are above and beyond the normal expectation. Many signed up to be weekend warriors, yet end up serving tours in Iraq and Afghanistan that are comparable to their counterparts in the U.S. Armed Forces. They serve on the battlefield with distinction. I have a nephew who recently returned from Afghanistan. He's in the regular Army, and I am aware of what the transition services are that are available to him. What we're asking here today is that our reservists and National Guard's people be given some similarity in how they transition back into civilian life here in the States. After giving so much to us, we owe them the time and resources to restart their lives back home. I intend on voting yes on House Joint Memorial 4, and I urge you to do the same.
Further discussion, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the memorial.
To the memorial.
Colleagues, I am really appreciative of your support of HJM 2, and I'm also pleased to encourage you to support HJM 4. I particularly want to note that these are not just joint memorials that we're putting our name on so that we can feel good. I want you to understand that Oregon's congressional delegation is poised to move these efforts forward in Washington, D.C., and have asked for our support. That's the reason that the Interim Committee on Veterans Services looked carefully at ways that we could perhaps better support our aging veterans, as well as finding better ways to address the very unique needs of our current area veterans. It's important that we remember that deployment follows an orderly 4 to 6 month training and mobilization schedule. Then when our soldiers return from conflict, they understandably need some time for brief decompression, reintegration, reconnection with family before they are forced by financial necessity to return to the workplace. Our current system of redeployment back to civilian life provides just too short a decompression period for veterans who have been exposed to the rigors of combat. We ask our soldiers to go from patrolling violent neighborhoods in Iraq or Afghanistan 1 week to a smooth transition to U.S. Main Street the next, and that's simply not fair. I appreciate your support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I must emphasize the downtime needed by these veterans. Again, I must emphasize that they come from a background of a year or more that is nothing but violence into a peaceful society, and it's a very, very difficult adjustment period. I ask your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the memorial should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. HJM 4, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of HJR 8 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Thursday, February 12, 2009 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 56 relating to complaint of discriminatory practice. Senate Bill 60 relating to fees insured by Bureau of Labor and Industries for collection of judgments. Senate Bill 86 relating to extradition. Senate Bill 164 relating to reporting of assets for public assistance purposes. Senate Bill 173 relating to membership of State Board of Psychologists Examiners. Senate Bill 174 relating to State Board of Psychologists Examiners. Senate Bill 183 relating to taxation of demolished property and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 197 relating to Stuart Law Clerks for the Public Utility Commission and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 234 related to procedure for judicial review of land use decisions. Senate Bill 240 related to personal information about debtors and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 323 related to electronic submission of reports to the Legislative Assembly and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the first time were passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In keeping with the sesquicentennial events that we're celebrating, especially this week, I want to make sure everybody knew about an event that's happening tomorrow at noon, room 50, hearing room 50 downstairs. This would be an event to celebrate Oregon's heritage, and I hope everybody can come learn more about a new group called Reviving Oregon's Amazing Roots and their efforts to preserve the important records of our state's history. I will be sponsoring a bill, or actually a resolution, to honor some of these historical documents which record our amazing legislative and cultural heritage. I hope everybody can come. It's tomorrow at noon, room 50.
And colleagues, you will note on your desk a couple of items that will be relevant to Saturday's commemorative sesquicentennial session. One item that is the Empire Builders. You can do some research for the debate we'll be having. And then a petition that is marked Resolution 1 for sesquicentennial action that comes to us from the City of Oregon City. So, homework for Saturday. Further announcements. Remonstrances. Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10:15 Thursday.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Thursday, February 12, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Thursday, February 12, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourned.